excited to be here today with Paige Thompson and Jan Rose. Paige is a fantastic performer at the Chicago Magic Lounge who has also toured internationally with a few different acts and is about to do her first week at the Magic Castle next week. And Jan Rose is an amazing magician and dancer who toured for many years with Danny Orleans in a fantastic second sight act that I actually have seen. And it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's so good. It's so, so good.
It's ridiculous.
It is so good. And now, both of you have now been working here at the Chicago Magic Lounge since it started, yes?
Yes.
Did either of you work at the lounge in its previous iteration at the other venue? Jan did.
Yeah, Jan, even with this one, when it opened, I didn't start. I was actually gone. I was on tour in Germany and then Nashville when it first opened. So I had filled in like one or two nights before I left for Germany. And then when I got back from Nashville, which was like September of last year, then I was here all the time.
Yeah, and you basically work here every, both of you pretty much work here every single night.
A lot.
You know, I'm here probably on a regular basis. I'm here Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then it depends on the house.
Yeah.
If there's a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday where they're oversold, something happened where there's just a large group and they need extra magicians on the floor, I might get a call.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't say that I'm here every night, but that weekend is very full usually. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm rarely here and I don't see you, Jan. I'm just going to say. And it could just be that it's been Christmas season.
Yes.
So you've been here quite a bit.
Yeah.
But I mean, I feel like you're here a lot.
Yeah. There's been some extra shows and some extra nights where, because of the holiday season, but on average, you know, I'm here Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Okay. And and Paige, you're basically here all but one day.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I sometimes have Monday or Thursday off, but I tend to work them. So I don't care. I'm happy to do magic every single night. Yes. So I am not complaining about that. It is a very good problem to have, magic every single night.
So it's been cool for me to kind of fly back in. I always say I'm like the fun aunt of the Magic Lounge because I was here when it was born and then I left and did my own thing and then I showed up and like, oh my goodness, it got so big. And I just do that and everyone here is tired. They're like, thank you. And so we've been working really hard. So it's been cool because I feel like I get an interesting perspective on the way the lounge has grown because I'm not here to see it grow all the time, but I think I'm here like every 2 months, it seems, or 2 or 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen both of your roles really expand in terms of your relationship with the lounge. Jan, when I first started coming here, you were mostly doing tables. Mm-hmm. And now you often host the show, which is a wonderful role for you because it pulls in so many skills from your previous life.
Yes.
And Paige, when I first came here and saw you do tables, you were not the freaking card slinging. My goodness, because I spied on both of you doing tables. And I remember Paige being like, you know, a couple of packet tricks and some like nice stuff. You were still good and very personable.
Yeah. It wasn't great by any means.
It was very good.
Yeah.
But now your stuff is real slick and showy and sleight of hand hardcore. You both have really evolved at the lounge in the last couple of years.
But we are super lucky because we have this core of close-up magicians that are amazing. And you have to up your game if you want to be a part of this because I was super intimidated when I first started working here and I saw the skill of these guys. I mean, I've worked around magicians for forever, but the close-up skills are insane at this place. And I just knew I had no choice but to get better. And really, doing these tables every night, you learn so much. And you just grow in confidence because you realize, oh, maybe I am better than what I think I am. The audience, if the audience likes you, it helps. You realize, okay, I don't suck. You know.
I think, starting with being personable is really helpful. And I think, Jan, you have a lot of that. When I spy on you doing tables, the first thing I see is you come with this huge smile and you're so welcoming and pleasant. And then the magic is almost ancillary because people are like, who is this lovely person with the giant hair?
Thank you. Right. That's true. Yes, my hair enters the room before I do. Yeah. Well, I did work at the other place at Uptown, but I think Paige really hit it on the head. You know, she, when I went to Uptown Underground and they were looking for more walk-around magicians, that was the arena that I had the least experience in. And so they were willing, the magicians that already worked there, to say, okay, we're going to teach you how to do this. and we're going to teach you what we have learned works.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was, in a way, groomed there, learned a couple of things that I could do and felt comfortable with, but they taught me how to approach a table, how long to stay, how to introduce myself, how to move to the next table, how to work the room, how to be aware while I was working at one table, paying attention and focusing on the patrons that I was working with, but to also be aware of what was happening around me.
Mm-hmm.
Where were the other magicians? Was a server about to approach with beers or glasses or mm-hmm. food? So there were so many skills that I had to learn that the other magicians were able to help me and teach me so that I could do tables.
That's so
absolutely
cool.
Yeah, it was very cool.
So,
and I'm still learning. Again, that's a that's an arena though where I have the least experience
mm-hmm.
in doing tables or doing walk arounds. So I'm always looking and watching and asking questions.
Yeah, me as well. I'd never mm-hmm. close up magic. I mean, I've done it, but I never focused on it. I loved the bigger stage things. So mm-hmm. yeah, I just felt like my skills were nothing compared to what was happening here. So I was like, oh boy, yeah. is this gonna work?
Yeah. Yeah, I was pulling Eugene Berger's books out, magic and reading and restaurant magic and reading his articles and just going through all that material. And it was such a different, you know, I had spent so much time with close-up magicians. And Danny, my husband, is a close-up magician. But when I was asked to do it, I said, mm-hmm. wow, you know, I have to really figure out what to do. And I was felt a little bit like a fish out of water at first, you know. Yeah, it was really different.
How many tables do you guys think you each did? I mean, we're going to talk super ballpark here. How many different times did you walk up to a new table? How many nights before you went, all right, I think I kind of understand what this beast is? Or do you still not feel that way?
No, I feel comfortable. Now it feels, I mean, if I'm trying something brand new, I still get terrified because you don't know. You mm-hmm. want them to like it. But I've also realized if it doesn't work, I have 100 other people to go try this out on. So I've learned not to be scared. Just be confident, try it out, and if it works, it works. Yes. If it doesn't, well, you have other material.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely, it took me probably 2 or 3 months. I don't know table-wise, but probably 2 or 3 months before I felt confident in what mm-hmm. I was doing mm-hmm. without being like, oh, no. Because even just coming to work, I'd be a little nervous. It took some time for me to be like, okay, this is normal, not okay, I'm scared, but
yeah, and that's yeah. and that's I should say that's 2 or 3 months working yeah. 5 to 6 days a week
mm-hmm.
and 1 or 2 shows. So you're doing between 10 and 20 tables a night.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot of tables before you went.
Yeah,
all right. I think I kind of have this.
Yeah.
What about yeah. you?
And it helps you work out your material very quickly, you know, because you have the opportunity to do and on 2 show nights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is even better yeah. because you're still fresh. You're in it. You're in the moment. You're going to go right back at it and do it again for mm-hmm. another hour. For me, this was the best place to learn
mm-hmm.
because the framework was ideal. At the lounge, people are expecting and wanting you to come over and do magic. It's not like being hired by a corporate event or a special event or even a home party to do close-up. It's very different. When you're at a corporate event, the approach is interesting. You have to have the experience to know, are these people in a conversation where they don't want to be interrupted? Are these people engaging in business? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to come over to do a magic trick. they're trying to...
He's going
to
close the deal.
Right. Or am I at a social party where people are catching up and they haven't been together for a long time and they don't want me to interrupt them? You don't run into that problem at the lounge.
Mm-hmm.
The minute you walk over to the table, they're very accepting. They expect to be greeted by a magician and they're waiting. Mm-hmm. They want lots of magic.
They're excited.
So mm-hmm. that's one of the biggest, I think, struggles in close-up magic is the approach. Knowing how to break into a group and present who you are and begin to do a trick, a magic trick for them. And at the lounge, that is much easier. And so as a novice mm-hmm. in close-up, shoo, I was so glad that the moment I started to walk over to the table, they would look at me and say, oh, you're going to do some magic, you're the magician, oh, good, good. And how lovely is that?
It's really lovely.
Yeah. When you're a nervous new performer,
but your audience looks at you and they're smiling and they want you to come over and do a trick. That is so helpful. Mm-hmm. So I think what makes it a great place for us to learn and grow is that we're in a perfect environment here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The audience is very excited.
But you also learn how spoiled you are here the second you leave. Because like in July, I was gone for all of July doing shows in Jersey, which mm-hmm. was interesting. It was on a boardwalk. And I did stage shows. That was easy. No mm-hmm. problem there. But then they wanted me to do an hour of walk around in between. And people were not so happy with me approaching them while they're trying to get on rides or play games. And they all thought I was trying to steal money from them. They're get away. We don't want to pay you. I'm like, oh, nope. I am with the entertainment. You do not have to pay me anything. They didn't care. They just didn't want me to bug them. So
yeah.
You learn that, not everybody loves magic.
Yeah. I've developed so many very specific strategies for doing walk around in environments like that, especially when you're like outside. There's something about like a fair mm-hmm. where people assume that you're trying to solicit tips. Yep. And so the first thing you have to say almost is like, hey, I'm a magician here with the grounds and I'm paid to be here to take care of you and help your wait in line be, you know. Yeah. And that was a really learning experience for me as well, being like, oh my goodness, people don't want to seem magic. They're trying to, people don't necessarily accept a gift if they think that there's going to be strings attached.
Yep.
So they're like, this gift you're giving me.
Is it what, real?
Is it really going to pickpocket me? What's about to happen?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I will say also that, the lounge is wonderful and it does spoil you, but it's just that approach. Once you get into the act, it's like doing walk around anywhere else, I feel, because I've learned a lot. I mean, I've been here doing walk around for 3 months as well as 2.5. And I really feel like my walk around, my close up has gotten much stronger because mm-hmm. the lounge needs you to be at a certain level because every other magician they're going to see tonight is
good.
Extraordinary. Yeah. And there's no way you can kind of lazily do things and get away with it. They will know immediately. It's a very educated audience here. Sure. They know what good magic looks like.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm really curious to talk to both of you today, not just about your experiences here specifically at the lounge, but also your experiences as women, since the podcast is, a feminist podcast. Because doing walk-around magic, in my experience, for corporate environments over the last 10 years I've been doing it, has been such a weird thing. Because I book a lot of men to do walk-around, and then I watch them, because it's part of the job mm-hmm. when you're booking other entertainers. And I see the way men approach tables, and it was not the way I would approach tables. I would tend to go up and just start chatting with people and then let the magic kind of evolve more organically, whereas a lot of the men would come up already shuffling a deck. And that doesn't necessarily apply here, because here you can just walk past the table, make eye contact, and you're in.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't really need a line.
Yes.
You're just, they noticed me noticing them. Now we can do some magic. What has your experience been working here and developing your magic? And have you noticed that the audiences respond differently to some of the male performers here than they do to you? Is there something about the magic of the space that changes people's expectations?
I get on occasion like, oh, wow, a female magician. But really, it doesn't happen a lot. People mm-hmm. aren't surprised. Mm-hmm. We're dressed like performers. We look like we're meant to be here. And I'm shuffling cards, doing fancy flourishes. They're not surprised. I think there is more women in magic. So people are starting to realize it's the norm. But of course, especially older mm-hmm. fellas, oh, sweetie, can you get me a beverage? Oh, no. I'm here to do magic for you.
I'm not one of the servers, but thank you.
Oh, really? But once again, in this environment, people aren't shocked by us, and that's pretty nice. I haven't had too many experiences where people have been, who are you? What is this alien lady magician?
Right. Yeah, I agree, Paige. I feel as though I haven't had any issues with anyone saying anything odd or too strange. Mm-hmm. But I think you do too, so let's talk about it. The moment I go to a table, I introduce myself and I tell them who I am.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm either going to do magic for them or I tell them I'm the MC mm-hmm. for the show and I'm welcoming them and how are they doing. And so I introduce myself immediately. We also tend to wear something that does set us aside and we do look as though we're performers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that helps. And I was just discussing this afternoon with Max Maven. And that is that it's interesting. You want to wear something that allows the audience to feel, wow, They're the performers. They look like performers. This is exciting. At the same time, you want to be approachable. And you don't want to wear something that alienates you or puts a barrier between you and the patron. Because we are so close up and personal with them and to them. We want them to feel as though we are reachable, we are touchable. And that's what I go for quite a bit when I work. This is close-up magic. It's also a close-up environment, and it is also a personal environment. So I want the patrons to feel they can speak to me, touch me, and relate to me. I do want them to identify me, certainly, as an entertainer, but I want to be approachable. I'm always working for that. My background was theater. And in the theater world, you do not do that. You do not break that fourth wall.
Yeah.
You do not speak to your audience, and they are there to watch you. And if they see you after the show or there is a meet and greet or a Q&A or something like that, the audience approaches you very differently because during the show, they were not allowed to cross that line.
Yeah.
Here, the rules are very different in magic. We allow ourselves to step in, and we allow them to step in, and we touch and meet and greet and talk.
We need them.
Right. Yeah. We need them. That's excellent. We need them in a very special way when we do magic. So I've worked on that a lot by working here. That skill. Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me it's very conversational. Like, I don't come across as rehearsed in any way. I just say, welcome, how is it? Like, it's very simple, nothing over the top. I'm not trying to be fancy. I'm just trying to let them feel comfortable, let them feel welcome, and that I'm excited for them to be here, just so that way we have an easy relationship. It's not like they're intimidated by me, and I am not intimidated.
Yeah, you're a teeny tiny girl with pink hair. I get, and Jan is also teeny tiny. That's sort of the mandate at the lounge. We only book women that are teeny tiny.
And pink hair, Jan. Dye your hair.
Well, her hair is kind of pink in this light, actually.
Yeah, it's a little pink. I'm picking up your glow.
I'd love to talk more about this idea of wanting to stand out as a performer so that the audience immediately recognizes you as one of the paid members of the talent force here, but also not wanting to dress in a way that's alienating. I think that that line can be a challenge for women, because with men, it's a suit. You just wear a suit. You wear a suit that's a little different than the other suits. I mean, Louise has some fabulous suits.
Yep.
Some of the boys here have some great suits, and they're not all going to be black. A lot of them are colored, unusual, weird ties. And you can see, oh, I'm going to say this, and I hope nobody at the lounge is going to listen to this episode. You can see generationally the way that each of the performers here deal with that issue, right? You can see some of the older generation of magicians are leaning towards more like eccentric facial hair and the bold tie and the unusual shoes, whereas the younger men that work here lean towards being a little bit more fashion forward with the apparel and being a little bit more like clean shaven or like leaning less on just looking unusual, leaning more towards looking like high fashion, which is, I think, kind of the look of modern magic. I'd be curious to see, you know, you both have accomplished looking like a performer and also looking very approachable, but in very different ways. The two of you look extremely different when you do walk around. And so what are your kind of rules of thumb? Because you both have several outfits you wear. So how do you go about discerning what is going to be the most effective?
Well, since I'm here so much, I get bored and I want to be creative with my outfits. I don't want to wear, like a lot of guys, they'll wear a suit for 2 weeks and dry clean it, wear it. I'm like, I can't do that. I don't want to wear the same thing every. And it is fun for it. I think that's one benefit to girls is we can, you know, have more fun expressing our clothing. Because a suit is like $1,000. Or I can go find a skirt for $5 on clearance somewhere, you know? So I get excited. And that has been really fun, has been creating an image for myself because I've never really thought about it. But now I look for a lot of sparkles, and if it's on clearance, I'll probably buy it. And pockets. If I can find pockets, big plus.
Pockets. Yeah. Skirts with pockets has been my lounge discovery. I only buy skirts with pockets now. Jan, your aesthetic, to me at least, feels very like dancerly. I can see a lot of your dancer self coming out in some of what you've decided to wear during walk around.
I think, and I hope, it's less about my clothing and more about my presence and my style and the way I walk and the way I carry myself. I honestly feel that's also very, very important because you can get very dressed up or wear something that looks terrific, but it really is about the way you carry yourself and how you conduct yourself when you move through the room. And I think that's something that you grow into. Mm-hmm. And I think Paige said something that touched me and that I really can relate to when she said, I'm finding my style. I found that as I'm working here a long time, I'm growing into a style. Mm-hmm. You know, you said something similar to that. And I feel that way as well. And I feel like through my many years of performing, my style has changed.
Mm-hmm.
And my approach has changed. And that's because I've changed mm-hmm. and I've aged. And I've gone through different stages of performing in magic. When I first started in magic, I was working for children. And I did children's magic exclusively for about 7 or 8 years, doing the theater show with Danny and touring. But I worked for family audiences and children. So the way that my look
mm-hmm.
and how I kept myself to look that way for the work that I had was that image, was that person. And when I began to segue out of that, when Eugene Berger said to me, Jan, you can't play Twinkle for the rest of your life. What are you going to do? And I said, good thought. Let's discuss my next step, mm-hmm. right? And then Jay Marshall and Eugene and Max Maven, they said, you know, with the talents and skills that Jan has and the talents and skills that Danny has, they would be a good candidate to learn Eddie Field's act.
Mm.
As I was segueing into learning that act, and I was rehearsing for that act, I hadn't caught up
mm-hmm.
on who my character was. Mm-hmm. And I had a horrible experience with an agent because of it.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
And I was still doing children's work.
Mm-hmm.
And because you have to, is before you get into another area of mm-hmm. work and it's not developed, and you don't have that work yet, or enough of it to make a living, you still have to make a living, right? So as I'm learning that act from Eddie, and as I'm trying to put that act together, I was still a kids performer.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still doing a few shows here and there, trying to get on and in front of people, testing
mm-hmm.
my work with Dan in the adult show,
mm-hmm. right,
in the mind reading show. So we put together some pieces, and we approached an agency to see if they could get us work. And we went to that agency together, and we showed them some of our stuff. And the woman that was interviewing us was she was a tough cookie. And I had been accustomed to that because I grew up in the ballet world, where I went to ballet auditions and cattle call auditions. And so, you know, I was pretty tough about people criticizing, but she got up and said, "This is you." And she imitated me.
Oh, my goodness.
And she said, "I don't believe that you do this act, and I don't believe you're a performer in this act. This is you. You're like just too little and cutesy." And so she criticized, if mm-hmm. you will, what I was doing and sent us away. And so I remember the walk out of that building mm-hmm. of that audition. And it was very quiet, that walk, because Dan was so upset mm-hmm. because he was worried about me. How did I feel? So he didn't know what to say.
Yeah.
So the walk to the car was very quiet. And I remember there was an iron black rung fence
mm-hmm.
outside of the building where her office was. And I remember as I was walking past that fence, I was counting the rungs mm-hmm. on the fence so that I didn't cry.
Oh.
So we got to the car, and I said, you know, I'm going to go see Eugene.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll come home. I'll take a taxi. I'll come home later. And he said, are you sure? Are you okay? And I said, yes. So I went to Eugene's apartment unannounced, which I rarely did unannounced, but I went. And I buzzed, and he said, come on up. And I told him this story, and he saw that I was upset.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at me, and he said,
John Patrick. And I said, who's John Patrick? And he said, the salon that I'm going to take you to. And so we began my makeover.
Eugene Perger makeover, Night on the Town.
Right. So we went to John Patrick, and just to cut to the chase on this, I learned that I hadn't grown into this act yet. Mm. I hadn't grown into it. I didn't have, as Paige said, I didn't have my style. Mm-hmm. I didn't know who I was, beside the fact that I didn't know the act yet. You know, but here I was putting myself in front of this agent, mm-hmm. yeah. and I really hadn't grown mm-hmm. enough to do that. I didn't have myself put together enough to present myself to someone to say, this is who I am. This is my work. This is my show. Mm-hmm. Now sell me. Mm-hmm. And I had done that too soon. But I learned such an important lesson. This is way back in the 80s mm-hmm. that this happened. But I'll never forget that walk past that iron fence, counting those rungs. Mm. And Eugene was so lovely, and he's did a hand gesture that this podcast won't pick up. For those that know Eugene Berger, you know, he did a flamboyant hand gesture, and he said, John Patrick, I know what we'll do. And it was there that he spoke to me about building this character, building who I was going to be comfortable with doing this act. Mm-hmm. And I think that, as Paige said, we have to figure out who we are in this room. How do we fit in? How do we fit in with these other magicians to make an ensemble mm-hmm. at the lounge so that when people come, they have this experience and we are a part of this experience for them, you know, as entertainers. And we are an ensemble here. We all are a part of this place. When people walk through the doors, they see all of us mm-hmm. as a picture. We're a big picture that they experience. So for me, I try to remember that walk, you know, and it happens to me frequently. I'm always reinventing myself. Since you came and came back, I've been reinventing myself.
Yeah, I very much noticed that. Because you hosted for the first time at the Women in Magic show last year. Right. So I saw the first time you hosted, and it was wonderful. And I saw how much work you put in. I remember Jan coming in early. Mm-hmm. I might be outing you, so we can say this. But Jan came in early a few days, and we were sitting on the stage running your lines with Danny in the audience, and you guys were running and rehearsing stuff together. And I remember thinking, it's just hosting, isn't that? But then I've also started hosting since then, and I really respected what you did because I'm like, oh, it's sort of this thankless job that nobody appreciates how very hard it is. Mm-hmm. And it's been wonderful to go and come back and really see how you've made that your own. It's, you know, the way you host and the way you tell that story, you're so in it, and it's so different than the way everyone else does it here. And it's been really lovely to watch that evolution over the last year.
Thank you for saying that. And I think that's exactly right. I think anything in magic, close-up magic, you have to find who you are first. Mm-hmm. And then the decisions about your work, the choice of material, how you present yourself, how you dress, that comes later. But I think you really have to know who you are. And then those other questions are more easily answered. Mm-hmm. So with hosting, I felt confident because I had some of the skills mm-hmm. that I felt it took. Comfortable on stage, I'm comfortable with monologue work, and I'm comfortable speaking. I'm comfortable with relating to an audience from the stage. Mm-hmm. Most of my talents and skills are stage skills. Mm-hmm. And I'm comfortable physically on stage, moving because of my dance training. I understand how to move on stage. Mm-hmm. I understand motivated movement. I understand blocking mm-hmm. because those are the skills I learned as an actress. So those things were kind of there for me, but growing into the who is up there takes time, mm-hmm. takes a lot of time, and also your intention. When you're a host, you're not an entertainer. You're not a performer. You are hosting, and you think of it, I've been taught this by Max, you think of it as though you've invited all of these people to your home. Mm-hmm. To enjoy what they're about to partake in. I'm also there for the performer, to make the performer as comfortable as possible. And I think of myself
as a well-balanced diving board because I want the performer to hit the water with the perfect bounce. And I'm supposed to provide that perfect bounce for the performer by setting a tone, getting the audience excited and comfortable, and introducing that performer in a way that's going to get the audience excited to see them.
Mm-hmm.
I want that audience to be on every word. I'm listening very carefully. I take that intro and I write it and rewrite it. And I talk to the performer and I want the performer to feel as though I want to hear, ooh, ooh, even applause sometimes during the intro. Mm-hmm. They're excited for that person to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And as an entertainer, I've been on the other end of being introduced in a way, and some entertainers will use the expression, boy, I felt like I had to climb out of a hole before I could start my show because I was introduced so poorly.
Yeah. I think we all have like the world's worst introduction stories.
Yeah.
They're just so terrible.
Right. And I used to, with Dan, when he performed, I'd go and be in the audience. And I had watched him do shows, and I watched people introduce him, and I was just in tears. I didn't know whether to cry or laugh at the way they would introduce him. And so from experiencing that as well, you think, well, I want that entertainer to feel like they're hitting that stage and they're a star.
Mm-hmm.
And the audience is so excited for them to come out. So I do take it really seriously as a responsibility.
Yeah.
You've also made the audience the star, and people get so excited because Jan does this amazing thing where she knows every single person's birthday or anniversary.
And
or
where they're in the
they're
room.
They're moving or
their whole name.
Yes. She knows absolutely everything about every human being in that audience.
Yeah.
And it's different every show, but she remembers it. And these people, I think they almost love that more than the magic sometimes.
Yeah.
Especially when they're celebrating a big event and you shout out John's turning 62 today. He's so excited because you remembered where he was, what his birthday, and people absolutely love it. It is,
thank you.
It's become like a big part of the lounge.
I feel like it's its own magic trick.
Yeah,
because I watched the audience three times now when Jan is doing this thing. So what we're talking about is in between the first and second act in the show, Jan will come out because we need some time to reset. And we're kind of outing you for your bit. she has gone and she has talked to everyone and she remembers absolutely everything that's happening in the entire room. So basically every table gets a shout out. Every single table. And there's no notes. All from memory. I've watched the audience and three different times I've watched the same thing happen. She does one and everyone goes, how nice. And then she does two and everyone goes, what a nice thing. Then you do three and they go, she gonna do all of them?
Yeah.
Then four and five, they're like, okay. And then by six and seven, they're like, what is happening? Like, it's now a magic trick. You do just enough that the whole room just kind of goes, are we all paying attention to what is happening right now? Yeah. That lady knows everything. And then the whole rest of it, you hear the room ramp back up. Like people go, this is nice. And then eventually when they figure out what skill is actually being displayed, they enjoy it on a whole new level. So even if you're like, oh, my birthday was mentioned early on, you're still paying attention because you're like, is she seriously remembering 35 different pieces of information, everyone's name, everything that's happening, how old they're turning. It's ridiculous.
Where they're sitting.
Oh, yeah. My goodness.
Thank you. You know, that's something that evolved organically is a term I think we use in this profession. But the nice thing about it, I think, was that I noticed, and we couldn't help but notice, how many people come to the lounge to celebrate.
Yeah. Lots of birthdays.
Mm-hmm. So many birthdays, so many anniversaries, so many special events, right? And when you see something like that, and in acting, you know, it's so interesting, all these little voices that you hear in your head from your old teachers, whether it's a director or a coach or a class you took. But one of my acting teachers used to say, pay attention. You will not miss moments if you're paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be listening. You have to be looking. When you're an actor, you have to be paying attention. And when you pay attention to things, then you can react and respond accordingly. And that's when you have your freshest moments and you make your best choices. And so I thought, I have to pay attention to this. It's there. It's the elephant in the room. Mm-hmm. There's tons of people in this audience who have come to celebrate. I need to do something about that, right? And so the last thing you want to do is make someone feel embarrassed or feel like they're put upon. Because some people are timid about saying it's their birthday. Some people want you to recognize them. So what can you do so that everyone feels comfortable? So that was an issue I thought about. And then I thought, well, I have these skills that I've learned through the many, many, many years of studying the act that I do with Dan. And the skills that I've acquired to do that act efficiently, effectively, and in many different situations help me in other ways as well. So I apply them. And I took those skills and applied it to this problem that I wanted to solve. And the thing that I'm proud of in it is that what Paige said, and I thank you for saying that, is that it's for the audience. And it has to be. If I'm doing something that's self-indulgent, it isn't giving.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm truly, and this is Jeff McBride, and I've learned this from Jeff McBride. Jeff McBride says, fulfill your promises. If you're truly going to promise something to the audience, you must do it. So if I'm saying that I'm an MC that is there for my audience and my other entertainers, then it's not all about me. How fast I am, how much I can memorize, how groovy I'm doing, you know, up there. If I'm really fulfilling my promise, it's got to be a giving thing. So I have to find a way to do this where I'm not doing it as a showboat.
Yeah.
I'm doing it to give to them. So I had to work on that really carefully to figure that out. So I'm very humbly, I hope I can say this humbly, very proud of working on this piece because I feel like, first of all, I'm always excited about being original. That's very important to me. It's very important to do things that other people don't do. That's why I chose to do the Mentalism Act, because that's not something that many people do. It's a very difficult thing. And I also chose to make decisions about that act that are very unique and groundbreaking, that I don't wear a blindfold, threw the blindfold away in the late 80s, and that I also approached that act very differently than the traditional two-person acts.
Yeah.
Now, I must say, I had mentors coaching me on that. I had Eugene Berger coaching me on that. I had Max Maven coaching me on that. I had Ross Johnson helping me with that.
I had
Tony Andruzzi helping me with that. So I had many people saying, you know what, Janice, do it differently. You can. You're an actress. Do this act differently. Make it your own. Make it unique. Make it yours. And so that's another thing I try to remember, you know, is this is my craft, and so I want to be unique. And you admire some other people, you admire other things that people do, but you must look at the self and find who you are and do something that's yours and right for you. And so I think that that piece is a reflection of that for me and my growth here. So I appreciate you recognizing it, because there's always room. You have to keep going and growing and evolving. And so I thought, wow, this is fun, because now I'm taking something, all these things I've learned through my years, and now other things and new things, and now pushing that. So there is a lot going on there when I do that piece every night. And it's hard. It's challenging. But that's like the fun of it.
I mean, I can barely remember the table, their names, the four people at the table. So, Jan, what you do is insane.
It is absolutely insane. It's wonderful. If you ever come out to the lounge, try to make it out on a night where Jan is hosting, because it is its own performance.
Oh, thank you.
And the monologue you do with the little motions, that you always hit those marks every single night, it's amazing. At some point, we're all going to just do the lines with you because you're so precise. It's so fun to watch as another performer and be like, wow, just the commitment to the level of precision on that is fantastic. I would love to hear Paige's perspective on your evolution, because I thought that, Jan, that was a fantastic and compelling explanation of finding who you were and finding a way to be your own thing here and providing value in a way that you are uniquely qualified to do so. And I think Paige has gone through a similar but different transformation.
Well, yes. I was super lucky that this place came about because I've only been in Chicago like 2.5 years. So I got here 6 months before this Magic Lounge opened. They still had the Uptown. I had been there. I went in there once and then I ended up performing there like a week before it closed. Mm-hmm. Because I had finally gotten contact and sent in my video. And then Ben's like, hey, yeah, we're about to close this. But here, could you come do, you know, a feature spot, whatever. And I was stoked because I didn't know anybody in Chicago. I knew nothing. I had no idea how welcoming this community was either. Because I've been everywhere. I've just been all over the place. San Francisco is where I grew up. And I had a great group of people there. And then I had a lot happen. And I ended up moving to Vegas, just as kind of like I needed to not be there. And it wasn't magic related, it was just family related. So I just had to not be there. And I moved to Vegas with Dan Sperry. And I don't know if it was the smartest thing. I mean, I was 19 years old living in Vegas. I mean, I can't even, you know, whatever. I had no reason to be in Vegas. But being around somebody who, he is only a couple years older than me, but he knew what he was doing. And I was always so amazed by it. But I also was intimidated by it because I'm like, I'm not this good. What am I doing? Why am I trying to do this? Because I would see so many friends I grew up. They were doing Alex Ramon, Darcy Oak. Like, these were my good friends. And I saw all the stuff they were doing. And I wasn't there. And I don't know. I was so afraid, like, maybe I'm not good enough. And I'm my worst enemy because I had it in my head that they're doing this. I don't think I'm going to get to that, you know?
I'm so blown away by you saying that because I have been able to watch you do card magic in the 654 and hold this audience and do very sophisticated card sleights. Mm-hmm. And also see you in the mezzanine. Mm-hmm. And your card work is so amazing. And it sounds like you're saying you learned this recently.
I did. Yeah, I never
this
did.
This is blowing me away.
Everybody's learning at the same time right now. That never, you just came out of nowhere.
Because I mean, your card work. And no. Even because even Dan, my Danny, Danny Orleans, was standing next to me and he's going, whoa, wow, she's doing some really great card stuff here. And so,
yeah,
tell us.
I mean, I was doing, I did a lot of magic when I was little. Like, I started when I was 6, and I never had a job, not a real job. I was just doing birthdays and schools and festivals. I mean, high school, I was making a lot of money. So I'm like, I can do this, you know?
Good
I
for
can
you.
Do this.
You learned that you're right.
Yeah, but
it had value.
I mean, I unfortunately had a mom that did not believe in me in any way. Mm-hmm. She took every penny I made because she said, I'm your mom, you know, blah, 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 whatever. But that's why I had to get away. And when I left, I literally had no money. So it was like starting from scratch and not having anything to build it up. So people would call. And they still had the number because at this time nobody had cell phones. It still wasn't quite cell phone time. But they would call my house number that was my mom's. And she would say – she would tell people I'd passed away. Like she just didn't want me to succeed in any way. And she tried to hold me back on so many things. Oh, trust me. That's not the worst of it. But we don't need to get into that.
I'm in – absolute shock right now. That is so horrible.
Yeah.
So you basically had to escape a situation.
Yes. And I did, but when you're told every day how terrible you are by your mom, you start to believe it. As much as I try to be strong and pretend like it's not a big deal, I'm gonna escape. It was still in there, like I'm not gonna do this. Like, how can I? And then I let so much time go by before I ended up getting a gig in Branson, Missouri. And that was a mess. But it really helped a lot, too. As much of a mess as it was, I was able to focus. I didn't know anybody in Missouri. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what was going on. But I was able to just focus on magic. And I hadn't had that in years. And, I mean, I was already 28, 29 by that time. And I was in a show doing magic. That's all I wanted. And unfortunately, there was a lot of mess there. I wasn't getting paychecks and yada, yada. So then I'm like, you know what? I'm done. I came to Chicago. And this place was like a gift. And it's so weird how my life just started working. And, I mean, it took, I'm 30 years old, you know, before I was able to just do magic. And, I mean, going from doing magic at 18 or 19 to having that 10 years of where I had to bartend and do real life work. But it was also me holding myself back because I'm like, well, I'm making good money bartending in Vegas. You know, this is fine. But I wasn't. That's not what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So then I moved to the most random place in the world, Branson, Missouri, where they thought I was a witch. And then got out of there. But once I got to Chicago, just everything was easier. And this place has been the most amazing thing for me to grow and learn. And, like, Ben Barnes letting me – I never asked to do the 654. I was like, I can't do that. I am not going to do that. I am terrified to put together a formal close-up show, especially since stage magic was always my love. I just liked creating and being original with coming up with different stage techniques and ideas. But he's like, I've seen you on the tables. Like, yes. You can do it. And I was like, ha ha, you're kidding. And he's like, no, so he legit just gave me 2 dates. He's like, we're going to Johnny Bravo you. I'm like, I don't know what that meant, but he's like, you can do it. And I'm so thankful that he gave me that opportunity to actually try it. And now I finally get to be at the castle after, you know.
Next week.
You know, it's such a success story for you. You know, it's such a success story because you literally followed your dream, even though perhaps a very strong voice that was in your head and a part of you was not a positive voice.
Yeah.
You know, you still followed your heart and your dream and just pulled yourself in the direction of being a success.
Yeah. But, I mean, I don't know why, like, this the choice to actually move to Chicago, like, things must happen for a reason. Mm-hmm. They truly must because that's so random. Like, I don't know how I ended up in Branson. And then to be like, I'll try Chicago. You know, why not?
It looks fun.
And I've always liked it. But yeah, it's just, it's amazing where my life is now compared to like 3 years ago, 4 years ago. It's just, I'm so lucky that I'm literally doing magic every day. And that's all I've wanted. I've never hoped to be David Copperfield. I've never thought about that. I've just always said, if I could do magic as a living.
Yes.
That's what I want.
And you and I had that talk about that, you know, about feeling that we just want to be performers and that's our job. We want that to be our job.
Yeah.
You know, that's our jobs. And we just want that as what we do.
Well, and then we see, like watching you, Carissa, like we see what you've done and how far you've gone in such a short amount of time. It's amazing. And it's great for us to see that, you know, because it is hard to think where we can go. I mean, you could think it, but you don't think it's going to happen. And then to see successful people like yourself, you know.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting.
But it's a lot of hard work.
It is a lot of hard work.
And I think that that's what a lot of folks, they don't necessarily see it or know it.
Yeah. It's like magic. You know, in magic, you don't want the audience to really know how hard you work to make that trick work. They don't want to know that trick took 7 hours of setup.
Yeah.
Of like gluing tiny pieces of paper together. I wonder sometimes if the business behind show business is kind of the same way, where it's like you work and you answer emails and you're constantly planning and creating things and building structures. And like one of the things I talk about is I have audio from every single show and I line them up in an audio program and I look at the peaks. And if there's an unusual peak, I'll pull it out and listen to it and go, okay, what did I do? So I can keep track. And I mean, that's the way a crazy person thinks.
No.
I guess that's a crazy person.
No, that's not a crazy person. That's a professional.
What you need to do.
Yeah, that's what a professional does.
It feels crazy.
You have to analyze what you do and you don't want to get lucky and have just a performance that works because you got lucky. You want to be in control of why that worked.
Yeah.
And what you do when you do that is you're in control of your work. You're analyzing what you've done. You're tracking why it was successful. And if there was a moment that you thought wasn't, you're going to fix it because mm-hmm. you're looking at it to analyze why.
Yeah.
And that's an amazing thing to do. And it shows that you are paying attention.
Well, what I hear in both of your stories that I really found interesting is, you know, Jen, you're talking about all these people who've helped you over the years.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Paige, that was in your story too, all these people that you were connected to and mm-hmm. now coming to the lounge. And so it's funny because I feel like both of your stories, your success stories, kind of boil down to find your people, then find yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, first you have to find your people and know who can support you and push you in the right direction. And it's sometimes hard because, Paige, you were talking about how the people around you made you feel like, well, I'm not as good.
Yeah.
But then
and it wasn't them. It definitely was not them ever
saying.
Yeah.
It's just the premise that there are geniuses. And you're like, well, genius is an intangible thing and I can never access it. And so I'll just sit here and bartend. But then that same thing here in Chicago became the thing that propelled you forward.
It did.
So true.
I mean, you grow. So you grow. And when I'm 20 years old living in Vegas, seeing that Dan is doing a show on the Strip, and I'm like, I am nowhere near that. That's not going to happen for me. I can't do that. I don't know why, but that's was in my head. But then when I get to Chicago and I see the talent that is here and how welcoming they are and how much they want you to succeed, nobody here is against you. Like, it is great. Like, we all know each other's material. We make sure that nobody does what anybody else does. Nobody fights about it. They just say, oh, yeah, you do this. We don't need to worry about that. And it's just great that there's not that cattiness, and it's like building each other up. And when I saw how that worked, I realized, you know what? I shouldn't be intimidated. I should just do it. Go for it. Do magic. And if people like me, it doesn't really matter what a magician thinks. And in my head, I have always been worried about what magicians think of me, even though that's not my audience. And I think a lot of that from doing competitions when I was little, because that was a chance to perform, was to do competitions. But I don't know if they're the best thing, per se, for your...
Well, I think it helps if you have supportive parents. I think it's probably not the best thing to do if there's no secondary voice at home, like, giving you the other side of that equation. You know, competitions are great if you've got some mitigating factors on their own. They're a poison that slowly eats away your well-being. Thank you guys so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. This was so valuable to, you know, hear both of your success stories and how quickly you have both sort of found where you belong here and what is unique about you. And also the fact that you both took advantage of the fact that there's a place like the lounge and you just didn't show up and go, all right, well, I'm going to do what I do. Mm-hmm. You both use this as fertilizer to grow this new persona and these new effects and really rise up. I'm happy to be able to showcase your voice, Jan, because I think you've been part of the magic community forever, but we don't often get to hear from you. And Paige, I'm so excited that you got to be on the podcast before you did the castle, and everybody will know who you are. I got to just, you know, in a way, I'm like, I was part of the discovery process. You heard her here first, and then you saw the castle. I'm so excited for you, because the first time I did the castle is kind of when everything started for me, because I broke. You know, that was when everyone was like, who's this lady? And I just see it in your future, like next week, and it's just, I'm like vibrating. I'm so excited for you. I could not be more excited.
I'm not nervous.
No, you're gonna be fine. Be amazing all the time.
Be awesome.
Without fail.
Awesome.
Thank you guys so much for joining us for this very special episode.
Yes, thank you. Really appreciate it.
And we're all gonna go do some magic now.
Yep.
Because we are at the lounge. And
time for magic tricks.
Call time is 20 minutes.
Yep.
Thanks.
Shazam is sponsored in part by the Society of American Magicians. Thank you, SAM. Go join a club.